Hey everybody, welcome to Surface Level, curious conversations about the Black and queer experience. I'm one of your hosts, Tony, and today, Jordan, Damon, and I are discussing the intersectionality of the transgender community, sex work, and survival. Will proper representation help cultivate understanding and compassion for the trans community? What should the broader queer community do to foster a more inclusive environment for Black trans folks? This is The Stroll. All right, The Stroll. What do you guys know about The Stroll? I cannot wait to get into
this. I know about The Stroll. You know about The Stroll?
I'm just happy we have somebody here to know more about.
Listen, I know about a stroll, but I don't know about the stroll.
Listen, we know a lot, but we don't know everything.
We know a lot, but we don't know everything.
But we don't know it all.
All right, y'all. So y'all know how we like to do here at Surface Level. We like to bring people on who can share a level of expertise or a lived experience on a subject matter. And so today we're going to go deeper into the trans experience, which is something that the three of us don't have any real knowledge about. We don't have any close trans friends. And so we're happy to get that insight today and get some more understanding. So to help us bring depth to this conversation is someone who is a Black trans woman who has been living in New York since she was a teen, a fearless advocate for the transgender community for over 15 years. She currently serves as an associate human rights specialist at the New York City Commission on Human Rights. And today we're honored to welcome Tabitha Gonzalez to our Surface Level family. Yay! Welcome. We're so excited to have you here.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely. And so how we like to start our show here at Surface Level is we want to do a little icebreaker, get everybody comfortable. You know, so we're going to start with the game. And for this particular game, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I know you will, you are affiliated with the House of Maison Margiela. Am I correct?
Yes.
So this game is going to incorporate a little bit of ballroom for the girls. Okay. And it's going to be a little bit of a category situation going on. So let's start. At the Surface Level Legends Ball, which category are you sure to take home grand prize for? Vogue Femme, Butch Queen Realness, Face, Catwalk, Old Way, or New Way? Jordan?
Well,
she said,
I hate you.
I think, you know, I might be competing in Face. I don't know if I'll take it home, but I'll compete.
You compete.
Well, it's our ball. I'm assuming we're paying
yeah,
for
it's
it.
Our
so a little payola goes a long way. Maybe I'll pay for my trophy.
You're going to put your best face forward.
I will.
Okay.
It doesn't really work that way.
Let me know.
How about you, Tabitha? Which category are you sure to take home grand prize?
None of those.
None of those.
Those are Butch Queen focused categories.
Yes, okay.
I mean, when you say face can be open to all, or it would be specific to gender, uh-huh, in a sense, or identity. I don't walk any of those categories, but if it was a realness category, I'm definitely the icon slayer.
Go on.
Work.
What about work. You, Tamon?
Runway, I guess, Joe?
Yes. Going on a little catwalk. Runway. I'm going to say Butch Queen Realness. I'm going to give my best effort for that category and say that I'm taking home grand prize. Which of the five elements are you known for?
Chill.
Hand performance, catwalk, duck walk, spins and dips, or floor performance?
Chill.
I'm
known for clapping in the audience. On that one. No.
We're talking, listen, this is hypothetical. Like, if we have, this is our Surface Level Legends Ball. So at this point, you are an icon. You are a legend. You are the moment.
So we're suspending reality.
We're
for a moment.
Suspending reality.
We're going into delusion for ourselves.
We're suspending reality. This is our Surface Level Legends Ball. Which of the five elements are you known for?
Well, hand performance is the best tool that I need. Because there's no way. I broke my back.
We were actually just talking about this last weekend in Provincetown. Where we were just like, if we were to compete, we don't think that we would be able to do a duck walk. Because you have to be very athletic. You know what I mean? It requires a lot
you
of
do.
Strength. To do that. So yeah, I'll probably be doing the hand right along with
a good hand performance. I'm going to say catwalk because I just love when the girls come down. It's very like feline-esque. What about you, Tabitha? We're going to suspend reality with you as well.
Well, I do perform a little like, you know, it's been a long time, but I would say hands.
Yes. Give us a hand performance.
We're going to be like a group. Three tiers.
I was going to say we could be a group, but I was like, you know what? Actually, I'm not worthy. We'll support.
Okay. Now, on the hit show Pose, which house would you be a part of? House of Abundance, which Mother Electra ran. House of Evangelisa, which Mother Blanca. House of Ferocity, Mother Lulu and Candy. House of Khan, Father Jason. Or House of Wintour, when Mother Electra came back and said, this is my new house. Which house would you be a part of? Damon?
If we're based on that show, Evangelisa, just because I thought it was more about family than the like the ball piece of it. And I that is something I just gravitated to.
Okay. Jordan?
Abundance.
Yes. You're going to give Mother Electra the original house. Actually, that's a sickening house, though. I was thinking at first Evangelista, but then I was like, I would love to come back and give redemption with House of Wintour. How about you, Tabitha?
I'm going to, you know, I have to say the House of Wintour.
Yes.
Of course, Dominique is my sister, so I would have went to any house that she's
in. Yes. Love that. Okay, now this one here, a little bit more controversy. Mary J. Blige's Purpose Ball, produced by Miss Lawrence, was held in Atlanta and saw a panel of judges that weren't exactly all from the LGBTQ+ community, nor the ballroom scene, including Brandi Evans, Gail Bean, Blake Newby, and La Roche, and Mary J. Blige herself, all sitting on the judges panel. So there was some controversy and chatter, if you will, from the community around like some of the folks on the judges panel judging the actual ball. Was this a chop for you, or is it tens across the board?
Tabitha.
I can't represent everyone's emotions on this.
Nope.
So I'm going to pass on that question. I do think that there's validity to both sides. But I do think that, you know, there are traditions, there are, you know, rules, or just the ways that we conduct categories. And I think that, you know, a lot of people didn't get the exposure or the representation that they needed on the floor and on the panel. But I'm just going to leave my comment at that. But was it a great opportunity for ballroom to be exposed to a larger audiences? I think it was great, you know, but there's always an upside and a downside to everything. Mm-hmm. But moving forward, I think, you know, I know for sure that those who are, you know, making these decisions, you know, the hierarchy or like the Illuminati, like some people call it. I don't subscribe to none of that. I truly believe in the powers that make those connections to get ballroom to where we need it to be in mainstream media.
Yes.
Or whatever decisions that they decide and we all decide to do with ballroom, because this is our community and this is our story.
Right. Okay. So we're going to leave it at that. And lastly, just for you, Tabitha, we ask this to all of our guests. What are you curious about? And this could be anything.
I'm curious about, what is it going to take for me to just have my house, write a book, and raise my family?
Yes.
But nah, I don't think that there's a lot. I think a lot of the things that I was curious about, I probably experienced at one point or another. I always like curious to learn new things. I do want to try to eat different foods from different countries, but my money ain't there yet. So I'm curious as to how I'm going to make that happen.
Okay. Well. All right. So we're going to get into a whole dialogue about your experience, the trans experience. And so before we get into today's conversation, I'm just going to give a little bit of background on the documentary that Tabitha's involved in that just came out June 21st. And just to give the folks some context, it's called The Stroll, and it's a documentary that tells the New York City story about West 14th Street, which was once a central hub for trans women, sex workers, that has been displaced as the city's so-called meatpacking district, which we all know it to be now, and has transformed through gentrification. Now sporting high-end restaurants, boutiques, the High Line, the Whitney Museum. We all know who lives in New York, these things. And so with lots of archival footage, the documentary brings this world this lost world that they're calling it a lost world to life. But Tabitha, I'm sure you might feel different about that. And it's centering a subset of the trans community that's often left out. And so the documentary is actually available to stream on Max, which is the streaming platform that bundles all of HBO together. So now...
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I really loved about this documentary is that it was directed by two trans women. One of which, Kristen Lavelle, who worked on The Stroll at one point. And so I love that the story was told from the firsthand perspective. You talked about it a little bit in the game, but having that representation is great. But having the representation come from the vantage point of the people that are in the community is even better. And so my first question to you, Tabitha, is how do you think the Stroll documentary will help cultivate a stronger sense of understanding and more compassion for the trans community?
Well, I hope that it will help people to gain a better understanding of that sex workers are not just like your junkies, homeless rhetoric, or people who are like displaced. And that may be true for some, but many people choose to sex work for various different reasons. And may it be to sustain, to get something, or whatever their goal is. Like, there are so many different venues. People create these only fan pages and a lot of that stuff that we didn't have access to back then, right? So we were like on the front lines, right? Basically, we were like your first level of contact, if that's what you're looking for. You know, I would just say, I hope people would get the understanding that we are not just that. We are more than that. We are a community, right? We knew each other. We protected each other. And we knew that we had to survive together. Mm-hmm. Like, each one really did look out for one. And I think, you know, having the ability to now screen your clients and do stuff like that gives us a small level of safety. But I think people need to understand, as we are a people, we're not just your throwaways, right? I'm a prime example of that. We're more than just our sex work, you know? But if that is all we are, then that should be respected as well, because this is not about shaming the ability to sex work, because that's a choice. But what about those who didn't have a choice, right?
Yeah.
You know, so just to look at us and our humanity, and we were just trying to survive.
Yeah, like using the word humanity, I think is perfect, because I think that's exactly what I took away from it. It created so much more depth and understanding and context and nuance around the community and around The Stroll. And so I'm curious to know, from the three of us, we all watched the documentary. Was there any particular scene or moment in the film that stuck out to you that maybe shifted your perception, or maybe like was eye-opening for you?
Yeah.
Let's start with you, Damon.
There was just an interesting moment at the end where one of the women said, how many times did I have to go to jail to build this park? When she was standing on the High Line. And I think about my relationship to that neighborhood. I worked at my office. My former office is literally in half the shots. And there is, as they're in the main, like, little promenade and meatpacking. And you think about this area as I know it, someone that moved here 10 years ago, worked in that area for the past five to six years. And you learn so much about the history of it and what goes into building things like that, how gentrification affects people in a way that is more than, like, we say displacement as if it's this like umbrella term, as if like everyone just like, oh, everybody moved uptown or they moved over here. But yeah, it's really about the destruction of community.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about laws and such being in place that harm people from said communities to get to a place where they're not coming back there. And then, oh, now we can build our fancy museums, hotels, offices, etc. And I think that her saying that was just like it was 6-7 words, but like, mm-hmm, it really for me encapsulated what gentrification does, what the like tangible effects of it are. Because, yeah, like, displacement is such like a broad term. Mm-hmm. But like, it's really, this woman has continued to go to jail when she was just trying to work to either feed her family, whatever, whatever the means and the survivals that she needed. That's what she was doing. Yeah. But like, we put in place laws to not to allow her not to do that, so that we could build the Whitney, so that we can have the Restoration Hardware showroom, so that we can have Pastis.
Yep. Yeah.
And like, that to me was like just a very impactful thing. I love like finding little small moments that like have such bigger and broader implications, and that was something that really stuck with me.
Yeah, one of the things for me that like, as Tabitha is talking about sex work and doing and the need to have to do it for survival, is like, we had an episode a few seasons ago about sex work and
pay for play with Zola Bruce.
Yeah. And the various ways in which that comes to life. But never in that conversation did I really think about the trans experience. And so now, after having watched The Stroll, I'm just having just another layer of eye-opening moments. And one of the things that stuck out for me, and we're going to get down to this because this was crazy.
Okay, you got... Are these new glasses?
These are new.
Okay.
You're like,
you're about to drop some knowledge.
Like, this right here was crazy to me, and it had to do with the 6th precinct. And Tabitha, correct me if I'm wrong on that, but this particular precinct in New York. And so GayCityNews.com said that the police at New York City's 6th precinct were also something the sex workers had to contend with, as arrests on The Stroll were a regular occurrence. Everyone recalls having unpleasant encounters with the police. One of the women on the in the documentary said that they performed a sex act on an officer who then turned around and arrested her.
Yeah,
which was crazy to me, and that was like baiting to me. It says that another interviewee spent more than twice her sentence behind bars because of the difficulties she faced while incarcerated. Others talk about the walking while trans, which was a law that was put in place to target the trans community, particularly the Black trans community, and harass them for baseless reasons. Literally, you could be walking to the grocery store and get arrested and, you know, taken to jail. And this is one thing that I hope, Tabitha, if you don't mind sharing your experience, you talk about on the documentary having been, you were arrested, put in jail for 7 years, ended up being in there for 14. Mm-hmm. Can you talk more about that experience and what that was like being there, coming out of it, what life was like after?
Well, for me, like, my first case was like literally on 13th Street. Right. That wasn't ever, like, that was my introduction to, like, ever being arrested. And it was for, like, a bag of weed, right? You know, so that kind of was the catalyst, right? Because now I have a misdemeanor. I was already a butch queen up in drag, or whatever term we want to use. But at that moment, like, some of us were not safe to transition in our homes, right? So, you know, I would do what I needed to do when I went outside. I was accepted by some parts of my family, basically like my grandmother and my immediate core family. But like, I couldn't go to every family dressing the way I wanted to. My family was very religious. So I, you know, started to make money on The Stroll. And I remember Melissa, my friend Melissa Extravaganza, like, we started to walk around there. And I remember having my little weed, you know, we used to call it Sheen back then. I used to have my little Sheen. Yeah, I used to smoke my little Sheen and go and hang out. And I got arrested. Came back out, and I still didn't really know, like, that was just, I felt community. That's where everybody went. Like, you know, the people were there. And if they wasn't on the pier, you know, to go over there with the girls. Now, some girls were, like, in show world, where I would go and meet my mom and all of that, Letitia. Queen Mother Revlon, let me say that.
Yes.
And that was like a family. Like, I felt the sense of family there. So I felt safe there. Did I get a lot of arrests there from the 6th precinct? Yes, I did. My rap sheet is extensive. A bunch of misdemeanors, right? Then we have the felonies, which ultimately landed me in prison. So we're going to fast forward a little bit, because that's like so much in between.
Yeah.
Like, my introduction to The Stroll, who I was around, you know, the risk that I took to survive. And again, like, getting arrested, I got arrested young. So all those stories that I heard about, they're going to do this to you, you're going to get raped, you're going to get this, you're going to get that, I was already in fight mode because it was either fight or flight for me. And I wasn't going to look at this sentence and be in there and be somebody's person scrubbing and washing clothes. Mm-hmm. When the scene with Shantae, like, I remember being in the homo house. Like, I remember coming through and they had us in this little special bullpen and we were all being there. And you know that if you didn't see your girls on the street, you knew you would see them in C-73. But back in that time, like, if they didn't see you, you were dead. Oh, you know such and such, she dead, girl, she dead. And you would see them on the train the next day. But that's just because the epidemic of HIV was out at that time, rampant. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the girls, you know, I lost a lot of people. And I remember being in there and being fearful that it could be me. And I remember when I first went to Bear Hill and someone had gave me some stuff and they had put it on my bed. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that it was one of the girls who was looking out for me. And I spazzed out from the gate, like, because I needed to make my name known. I needed you to know that I wasn't no punk and you wasn't going to do nothing to me. And I screamed, like, who put this shit on my bed? Mm-hmm. And by looking, you know, and this is why you really can't go on appearance, right? I assumed she was just one of the boys. And we gets to fighting. That was my first infraction. Right? Of course, I was the aggressor in the thing, so I ended up, like, getting bounced around from dormitory to dormitory because, like, I was, like, this kid who kept getting infracted. But I was this fearful person who didn't know what the hell I was getting into. You see what I'm saying? I was here, and I'm like, you ever had to say, like, why am I here? I don't belong here. I always knew I didn't belong there. I was just trying to survive. Why the fuck am I in jail?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know? And I develop a nick for cutting. And it was either you or me. Because I've seen girls, like, get cut in the face. I've seen all that. I've watched how it go down in the yard. So I became very militant and strategic while I was in there. In the film, you'll hear me say I turned into a monster. Like, I was the one that you knew not to mess with. And I was okay with that. Because I understood earlier on that in that, people would respect violence before you can tote the Bible or the Word of God. You'd just be some Christian. Mm-hmm. Or you'd be that, you know, the homo. And in the Richter scale of in prison, we're at the lowest, right? It's a microcosmic world within the microcosm. We're like almost subhuman, right? So we're treated grossly by inmates. We're treated grossly by the officers even going through, you know, central booking. You know, we're isolated in this one little area. We're there all day when some of us are sleeping on the floors, everything, just to get to a cell where we can wash up. Like, it was just so many different layers to becoming institutionalized, as some people would say. And that was the hardest thing for me, you know, knowing that I wasn't going to come home because I just caught a case from stabbing somebody, right? Being in the box for, like, over 7 years, you know, coming out in a little 4x4, like, little yard area where I can go and talk to the next one that's locked up and mm-hmm. we get fed through a slot. But even in there, I knew I didn't belong there, you see? Mm-hmm. So it was always that psychological thing. And I remember being in Attica and I met this guy named Chinesu who kind of told me that my actions was wrong. And I needed to calm down. I remember clearly he said, what you trying to be? Because you can't, women don't do that. You out here fighting every time. And he just like, and he looks like a big brother to me. So I was kind of scared. He was big. And I was like, okay, you about to get it next. Say one more thing. I remember I was getting ready to come out to fight this guy who fixed my watch and stood in front of my cell. Am I going away from the question?
No.
Okay. He stood in front of my cell and he went to give me my watch, but he was also in his underwear. Mm-hmm. See, I don't like suspicion. I don't like talk, none of that. You know that you wasn't supposed to come. You know you're not supposed to come in my cell like that. You violated me.
Right.
So I told him to get out of my cell and it became this big thing. And I had my little son, shout out to Wild Out and 8 Ball. They was in the back, right? And I flew them a kite and I'm like, yo, on the lockout, he out of here. Mm. And Chinesso intercepted the kite. And when we came out, because, you know, you got to throw it to the back. And he grabbed it because it's the string that goes under the gate. So he grabbed it, looked at it, came out, stopped me. Long story short, I ended up, like, being in my cell. It was almost like I was submissive to him, almost like the authority that he had, because he held a lot of weight. I think he was, like, close to the imam of the prison. And, like, I knew, like, to go against him, you would have to tear it with everyone. Like, it was just, like, a no-win situation. Yeah. So... But thank God for him, right? Because I was able to start really unpack where's this anger coming from, you know, the frustration at being incarcerated because I wanted to survive and I was a youth and I was in there with no protection and the only thing I had was me and God, right? So
then coming out on the other side of that into the world 14 years later.
It was a different world. When I was out in the world, we had, you was a bad bitch if you had like the two-way pager. you was that one. You had a Stern coin, let alone if you had the phone, you could sit in the car. Like, you was that one. And to come back and literally see people talking in their phones and seeing all this digital stuff. And, you know, when I come home, they drop me off right there in 42nd Street. It's not like you're going somewhere. You got 24 hours to report to your parole officer. And if you don't have a place to live, you're going to a shelter. I knew a pretty bitch like me wasn't going to no shelter. Right? So I was like, what the fuck am I going to do? So I went back to look for community because I knew somebody would tell me where to go. Like, I knew. And when I got there, it was different. And I remember going to housing work, seeing Egypt, who's also in the film. She was doing support groups there. And that's where I met Cayenne. And I was like, yeah, you know, and I was asking for my mother. I'm asking for the people who I used to be with. Mm-hmm. Yo, what's up? What's up? I just like, you seen Letitia? It was like, she don't live here no more. Mm-hmm. And Letitia's my chosen mother, but I was away. So coming back home, it was like finding out that everything that I knew and everyone that I knew was different.
Yeah.
But you know me, I got to test the waters. So I still would go out there. And then the money, yeah, changed.
Wow.
I was like, bitch, I'm not. What are we going to do with this? So I knew I couldn't survive no more out there. And I wasn't hip on the whole, you know, online dating thing. And I just knew in my gut I didn't want to do it anymore. Like, because I didn't want to go back. Like, it was the whole, it's different. You don't know when the cops is coming. It used to be Tasty Tuesdays and Thursdays, like one of the ladies says. But it was probably a different day now. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't going to take the risk. So it was very difficult coming home, and thank God for like the people who were placed in my life who kind of helped me unpack that and got me the resources I needed to be the person I am today.
Yeah. And a lot of what coming out of the prison system sounds like is your sense of belonging was displaced. When you went in, the world and in which you knew it was completely different than when you came out. Gentrification, like that was showcased in the film. And it was just fascinating to see how quickly things changed and how politicians and like the mayors, that Bloomberg and Giuliani, made it so. And so coming out and seeing the stroll is not the stroll no more.
No, it really wasn't.
How did that affect your sense of belonging? And where did the girls go?
I remember like going to the Red Umbrella with my husband and just like trying to find community. And the Red Door was like someplace that Cayenne was at. And like, you know, they would give out food and stuff, but I didn't know where community was. Midtown had changed. Mm-hmm. Everything had changed. And everybody had these damn phones with all these apps. And I'm like, whoa. So when I got Facebook, oh, I was excited. I had created an account and I was really trying to find people. I would go on to find my mom, but she's no longer here. So like she routed me in the spaces where I would go to. So I found community, like when I found Nicole Bowles, right? So, and I keep saying names because I know that names have power and I know that there are people who are a part of this narrative. For me to be able to show up. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying not to get choked up.
Take your time.
Because it wasn't easy for me. And I remember Nicole moving the hair out of my face saying, show your face. Then me meeting Sean. This fucking displaced kid who I needed a shot. I just didn't know where to get it because I didn't know where community, where I would feel safe. So many things had changed. The people who I was connected to were like doing business stuff and it was just like doing stuff. And I was in the shelter trying to figure it all out. You know, thank God for Sean that he would take my resume, help me cultivate it, that I would get my first job working in a law firm with this white trans woman who would give me my first job, Jillian Weiss, and thus began the road to activism and lobbying because I didn't have anything. I had to really try to figure out. And then I realized that I wasn't the only one that was going through this, that it was others just like me. So then I found community. I remember Cecilia and Lala giving me a microphone saying, speak. Mm. And I was like, well, what am I going to say? I was like, you got this. Tell your story. And I kept hearing this thing about tell your story, tell your story. I was like, well, why? What's so special about mine? Right? But then I began to cultivate the language and I found community with them. They have disciplined me. They have harmed me. They have helped me. They have shaped me. And that's where I found my community. Ballroom is my community. Getting back into the House of Revlon then was like the best thing for me ever because I remembered what it was when I was, before I got arrested. But even those things had changed. There were new people. And new things, and everything was new to me, you know. So, I think I did pretty good for myself.
Wow,
yeah,
that is so moving. Like, just the when you talked about going back to the prison system, being at the bottom of the barrel, like less than human, essentially. Mm-hmm. And coming out, when people, when we talk about the LGBTQ plus community, the trans community is often lost mm-hmm. in that. Mm-hmm. And when people go out to fight for our rights, y'all show up for us. And then when it's time to show up for y'all, where's the rest of the community?
It's been that way. So I've always subscribed to like, no one is going to fucking save you. Like, that's my thing. If we don't talk, let me say this. Many organizations and CBOs have profited large amount of grants based off of our narratives and our pain. We've sat on many tables and took Metro cards, 250, sometimes net 90, net 30s, to tell our stories and be discarded. And they would bank off of that and profit off of that. Right? And this is how they started to create the services. We would give you the keys to us for cheap because we needed to survive. But you created services for us, right?
Yeah.
With people who were not trained to give us those services. So we figured out we had to really go in and, you know, get access to these jobs to be able to provide the services to our community. Whoever made that decision made the best decision by having us provide the care for our own because we know exactly what we need, right?
Yeah.
So coming back and trying to navigate all that newness and being in different spaces, it was very hard because I was always seeing that they're not going to help us. They're not going to come for us. We have to do this, you know? So when I was approached to tell my story, this was an opportunity. And I've heard so many times from some of the same people I've mentioned, tell your story. Your story is just like, wow, tell your story. I'm like, oh, yeah. Because life is lifing, and I ain't got time. Like, y'all, you know, like, y'all been here for a minute. Like, I everything is still new to me.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to get, like, I have a hunger in me. And they're like, well, she almost 50. But I'm moving like I'm 30 because it's all still new to me.
Yep.
I'm not tapping out till the lights go out. You see what I'm saying? So I'm going to keep on. Now that I'm empowered and I've been given an opportunity to do that with the stroll, shout out to Christian and Zachary and Matt and the animation team who gave this girl formerly incarcerated for 14 years, former junkie and sex worker, an opportunity to sit at the table, give me the respect that I deserve, right? I was picked up, brought to, fed, taken care of, right? And I was told my story with the dignity and the respect. There are agencies that do that now, but they knew. Why? Because it was trans people at the forefront bringing out these stories, because mm-hmm. they knew the mm-hmm. importance of it, right? And I felt vulnerable enough and safe enough to share that. You see what I'm saying? So every opportunity that was afforded to me has been by grand design. You know, I've never been one to, I've always like got counsel. Mm-hmm. Like, I know I annoy people. And if y'all hearing me, I know I annoy the hell out of you, Temperance. I know I annoy the hell out of you, Simone and Rucka and my husband. Thank God for him. But I continue to ask counsel before I move into things because it's still new and they've all been gentle with me. I've made some mistakes, but I feel confident now to share my story and to sit here with you and talk about it. Yeah.
Well, we really appreciate that. And I think with us still being in Pride Month right now, like everything that you said right now really made me think about a certain part of the documentary where there was a comparison made between the murder of Amanda Milan and the murder of Matthew Shepard mm-hmm. and how it showed just like the really huge disparity of care and humanization. One black trans woman dying in Port Authority. And if you've ever been in Port Authority in New York City, you know that it's a ton of bystanders, like buses, trains. It's in the center of the city and no one helped. And then you have Matthew Shepard, a cis white gay male who was murdered, and the entire country came together to show their support. And I think that it's really important that in Pride Month that we bring more attention to the fact that we, the three of us, could be doing so much more for the trans community and the black trans community. And that this documentary isn't just like, you know, saying, you know, bad job to the cisgendered straight people. It's us too that need to step up. And so I'm so happy that you feel safe enough here to share your story and to give us more details that aren't in the film, because I think that adding that texture just continues to help sort of build understanding and build compassion and get people to listen to these stories and be open to them and look inward and figure out how they can be better advocates for the community. So thank you for opening up and sharing with us.
Listen, I'm just at a space in my life where I have to birth some new things and get rid of some old ones. And if me birthing opportunity, birthing, you know, because you know, by the words of our mouth, we'll have what we say. I truly believe that. Just give life to my words. So therefore, I can gain the access that I need. Right? When I first came here, you know, like I told, like, this is my first time being on a podcast of this level. Right? You'll see my, I've done some of this, like with friends and stuff, but it's just like us being us. Like, I don't know any of you. So I'm in a space and I'm maybe a little bit guarded, but I feel like I'm safe here. Like, you're not going to harm me in this space. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, that's how we come, because we've been so disappointed by our own. Mm. Right. So it's always hard for us to come in this space where we don't see ourselves. And it's like, how am I supposed to talk to them and tell them about me? Yeah. What part of this conversation are they going to take? Mm-hmm. Am I doing right by my community? That's why I use I statements, because yeah. I can't represent my whole community.
Yeah, and what, just to give, I totally went over my head how we even met. Tabitha mm-hmm. was in the Bronx, like at the top of the month, the Bronx Pride flag raising ceremony. You and I both were honored by the Bronx Borough Hall president for the work that we've been doing in the community. And I was sitting right next to you at the ceremony. And I remember being like, hey, and you were like, hey. And then like later on you came and you was like, listen, when I go up there, I'm gonna need you to take video. And I was like, I got you. And you said, I'll do the same for you. You're gonna be my buddy. And then afterwards the flag went up, we started talking, you gave your story. And this is how the world works. And now you're here with us, actually really giving your story on our platform, and we don't take that lightly.
I appreciate you for that. Like, even there when I told them, like, some of us, and I'm pretty sure, like, as the Black experience, we do a lot that we don't hear the words thank you. Right? So it felt good to be acknowledged for any of the things that I've done. I've done many, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's good to have someone say, you're doing good, because I often tell myself that I'm not doing enough. Right? One of the greatest things that my father had said to me, we were having a conversation, and I was like, oh, I got to do so much. I got to do so much. You know, I want to, like, be so creative and just do impactful things for community like you. And he said to me, I don't want you to have to do a lot to be like me. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. So it's important to me that I show up when I say I'm going to show up on time, professional, and do it, right? Because I have kids that look up to me. So the same way he takes them shots, and many others who come before me who deserves access to these spaces and talk and tell their stories, I stand on huge shoulders. You know, so when I come, I need to be able to be of service to the ones who look to me. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yeah.
So I hope that that's on your question, but I'm just really emotional in this space because, like, as I'm telling my story, and that's another thing that people don't get. When we tell our story, we relive our trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we're sent away with, thank you. Sometimes that's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because now that trauma is with us the whole day. And we have to re-unpack that and get back to our safe space. So something me and my sister says, I was nervous when I came in. She made me say, look in the mirror and say to yourself, I am going to meet my good. Thank you, Dominique. So I am here to meet my good. And whatever you take from this, I hope that it's of good and that it does good for the listeners.
Well, before we come undone, we want to be cognizant of your time today, and we know you have things to do and people to see. So
yeah,
I'm going to let
go see my father.
Damond give us the last.
We're going to wrap. Okay. All right. So we typically like to leave our guests with a bit of homework. So we're going to ask you give them a bit of homework today. So given your role as an activist and in the forefront of the trans community, of the trans community's liberation, what steps do you believe that the broader queer community can take to be more inclusive and create a more empowering environment for Black trans individuals?
Uplift our Black and queer community.
Mm-hmm.
Get involved in the things that we do. And, you know, invite us to the table, because we have people in our community. We have what we need. We'll create our own tables.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just say that, like, I used to think from an area of deficit, you know, I don't think that. I think in abundance. I have so many references in front of my eyes of Black and brown queer folk who can mobilize, who will provide. So many people within my ballroom community who I love and adore are at the forefront of some groundbreaking historical things. So what y'all can do is lift that. Lift those voices, because we're not all free. We're not free until we're all free.
Right.
You know, Black and brown, queer, trans folk, and trans folk being predominantly trans women who are at every turn of violence, be more sensitive to our needs and be willing to stand in the gap, because when something happens to one Black person, it happens to all Black people. And we need to make sure that we are current and staying abroad and what we need to do to see what best serves our community. And that's all of us. Did that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
No, yeah. No, there is.
You guys
nothing.
Got me nervous in here. And I do this.
Honestly,
like, they're going to read me books.
I'm like hanging on to every word. And I'm sure the listeners and the viewers are gonna be the same way. Like, what you're saying right now is so important and so invaluable coming from your perspective. And so, like, the listeners need to, after they're done listening to this, your other homework is to watch The Stroll, because
The Stroll
is streaming on Max, and I watched it twice because I was just like, there were some things that I thought that I didn't really hear correctly. I was like, I need to go back. And
so what was one of your favorite parts of it? Let me
ask. Yeah, you could ask us a question. I mean,
For me, I think it was learning more about Sylvia Rivera. That was prior to watching the film, I didn't know much about Sylvia, and I love that there was so much of the film dedicated to show her activism over the years and over the decades. And I just think that also the way that it was shown, again, really was eye-opening into like how much more work the broader queer community needs to do in order to make sure that trans folks and Black trans folks are supported. So that was probably for me.
I think for me, what was really just powerful to watch, first of all, one thing was the animation that helped to tell the story. I know there was a specific group, and I wish I knew off the top of my head what the name of the animation group was that worked on this, but those scenes in between that helped weave together the story was so powerful. And just, I'm a visual person, and so like watching that really helped the story land for me. And then also there was so much footage from like back then, looking at me packing then to now, that I was like comparing and contrasting then and now. I was like, wow, the video footage of like RuPaul back in the day, that was eye opening when RuPaul was doing a little like kind of like a spoof on the trans community as a drag queen, but it was sort of like the butt of the joke was the trans Black women. And that was shown, and that didn't age well, but I mean, we all have done things that are unsavory enough, and so we can move on from them. But there were many things like that. I was just like, this is a history lesson for me. It's a history lesson, and it's appointment TV for anyone in our community.
Yeah. The director's name again was, I'm blanking.
Christian Lavelle, Zachary Drucker.
So
Matt Wolf.
The thing that I found most interesting is, very small, but at the very opening, and she goes, I'm going to be the one directing and telling this story. Because I think about, obviously, the marquee documentary for queer cultures, Paris is Burning. Mm-hmm. So by says straight white woman. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a great documentary. I think it does a lot to give your crash course, maybe, if you aren't directly involved with ballroom. But the depth and the gravity of how this story was told, I think no one but someone living in it can do it that way.
Yeah.
And that, I think, was the difference in something unique and something really just special that, like, that was one of the opening phrases. The very first things that were
that
said.
Pulled
and, like,
me immediately.
That never
Because wasn't
left.
It rings in my head, and I don't know if I'm saying it right, but I believe she said something like, I own my liberation or something like that.
That was me.
That was you.
So I do say in the movie, I am my own liberation. Mm-hmm. And I say that because no one is going to save us, you know. And the minute that we, you know, wake up and realize that, you know, those who may be adjacent to our, you know, our journey or our experience, they're not going to help us. And in fact, sometimes it's not really their responsibility, and they may not feel an obligation to do so. So when we want liberation, you are your liberation. You create your story, and you get to dictate what happens to you in life, and you teach people how to treat you, right? So it was important for me to realize that, like, no one's going to save you. I've been in many situations where I had to save myself. So I became my own liberation. Who knew that I would be incarcerated for 14 years in the city of New York, come home, and then be years later working for the same city that held me captive for 14 years. You see what I'm saying? It took, and I just want to say this, right? I name drop because I honor them. And I believe where honor comes grace, right? So I honor those names of the people who were there for me, right? Because I didn't get here by myself. They showed me doors, I walked through it. So the next podcast, you know, because I'm just going to say it, right? Because for me, I'm in the space of what next, right? There has to be a next. My story did not end at the stroll. Mm-hmm. You see? As you see in the movie, I'm walking away from the stroll. My story did not end at the stroll. There's more. And little by little, I'm going to have opportunities to say that and to tell that more, because there's so many nooks and crannies. But what I will say, if I can take liberty,
yes,
is that every trans person under the sound of my voice know that you are loved, you are valued, and your life matters. No matter where you're at on the spectrum in your transition, no matter where you're at in your life and what difficulties you have today, I am proof that you will get through it and you will make it. You are wonderfully created to be the being that you are, and continue to be great and don't give up on yourself. That's it.
Well, if you'd like to provide any information about how people can find you on social media, any upcoming projects, you, in addition to the stroll that you want people to search out, this is your time to also share
that.
Well,
my Instagram is Tabitha Gonzalez. You'll probably see it spelled here. You can continue to use that. The animation team, if you want to follow them, it's Awesome and Modest on Instagram, because they're modest. They like to do the work behind awesome. The scenes. And they're definitely awesome. Their animation was fabulous. As my, you know, I have a sister who always says this word, Erica. She says, it was very delicious. The animation was very delicious. So I had a great time here with you all, right? So if you want to follow me, Tabitha Gonzalez. It's just that I can only be me. So just tag that in. You'll find me. But if I can leave you with any resources or references, please, please tune in to things that are ballroom. Like, we are a talented group of people. We're all not vulgars. So, you know, just, you know, don't come at us with all these, you know, I'm not jumping off no tables. Spinning. I'm a little bit too old for that. But we're all not vulgars. There's so much more to ballroom, and the world has yet to know that. Mm-hmm. And there are people in places that are going to make the world understand who we are. Yeah, like, I'm drawing up blanks because I normally am just like, gung-ho, I have my little notes in front of me. And today I really came unscripted because I wanted it to be raw and I wanted it to be me. And I think that when people hear raw stories and raw narratives, they get to understand it. This is not a story of me being a victim. I'm a victor in this. Mm. I'm able to provide for my family. I have a loving marriage. Shouts to my husband, Louis. We've been married 12 years. Something that they said we couldn't have. I am 49 going on 50. I was supposed to be dead at 35. Mm. You know, everything that I wasn't supposed to do is now just beginning for me. So it's a new season for me. I'm ready for my new season. And I thank you all for having me here. But if I don't get in this cab and go see my makeup artist, I'm going to get in trouble. Right. Okay, I'm on my way, boo. Okay.
And that is all the time we have this week. If you enjoyed this episode, let's keep the conversation going. Let us know your thoughts and questions at surfacelevelpodcast.com. And remember, stay curious.